This is the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, teed up at Landsberg Golf Club and the Florida Golf Trail. Landsberg Golf Club is located in Palm Harbor, Florida. It was the site of the ninth event on the Todd Wright Tour, our sold-out Final Foursome event back on April 1st. And anyone who played in that event can tell you how good the greens were and the overall condition at Landsberg Golf Club. Despite the drought, finally, there is some rain in the Tampa Bay area the last couple of weeks, but despite the drought, Landsberg Golf Club has had plenty of grass on the fairways, tee boxes very well maintained, and the greens continue to be significantly above average relative to other golf courses in the Tampa Bay area. Landsberg Golf Club is very popular, especially with people in the Palm Harbor area, so you may want to scout for your tee times accordingly, either at landsberg-golf.com or via Paradise Golf, or just call 727-784-7333, 727-784-7333. An extremely challenging 6,800 from the Golds if you are not, say, a 6 handicap or lower, I would not advise you to play from the Golds. Guys, if you're just going out to have some fun, buy some beers from the ladies on the beverage cart, please play from the Whites at 5844. Don't play from the Blues or the Golds. You're not proving anything except you don't play a lot of golf. Just go out there and enjoy the course from the White Tees. Ladies, you are just over 5,200 at Landsberg Golf Club. Palm Harbor, Florida, 727-784-7333, one of seven golf courses on the Florida Gulf Trail. Getting close, aren't we? We're almost to July when we can really start revving up conversations as it relates to season-long fantasy drafts. You'll be in the mood. Late in July, we'll start opening training camps, and we'll start to get some more information about depth charts and some other things that give us information to set our draft boards for these season-long leagues. Just a few things, actually four different notes I want to hit on in this particular podcast. Three of them have to do with running back situations. As of Friday morning, there was a report out of New York, specifically New Jersey, citing that Matt Forte could be an offensive workhorse for the Jets this coming season. Roto World doesn't buy it. I don't necessarily buy it either. I'm someone who did get some quality games out of Matt Forte last season, but it was pretty evident as the season went on that Forte couldn't handle the role. The Jets did want to use Bilal Powell. And while there have been a ton of changes with the New York Jets, and the fact that there hasn't been a head coaching change suggests the Jets simply don't want to pay two coaches this year to coach a bad team, as they are looking more to 2018 and beyond, sort of the Cleveland Browns approach at this point. The running back situation remains the same with the same two guys. I would imagine you need to play this as more of a true timeshare, and it's going to be a hot hand type situation. Sure, if we get into a game where Matt Forte is performing well, he's moving the chains, they'll probably keep feeding him the football. If not, Bilal Powell is going to see carries, and if he performs well, they're going to keep him in and keep feeding him the football or throwing him the ball out of the backfield. Just keep in mind, again, that the Jets are a bad football team. You might need to treat Jets running backs this year like you did Browns running backs a year ago, where Isaiah Crowell was worth playing or rostering, playing in some situations. Rostering, I can get that, as a season-long league, or as a daily fantasy-type bargain, but you're dealing with a bad football team. And if a bad football team falls behind by two scores, often they start abandoning the run and just throwing the ball more often. And in that scenario, I think that certainly favors a Bilal Powell. It certainly feels like any running back that you get off the Jets, you should consider no higher than an RB3. Best case scenario, if you own a Jets running back in a season-long league, it'd be an RB4. I really think that the way this is going to play out is you're going to want to try to pick up Jets running backs on waivers in a season-long league, or they would be more inexpensive daily fantasy plays where in the right situation, you might get a good bargain on a particular week. All right, speaking of timeshares, it's feeling that way at least a month before camp in Seattle. For those of you that want to make the same mistake you have made in previous years on Eddie Lacy, thinking that just because he made weight, just because he has a new team, just because he's on a Seattle team where he'll have new opportunities and you want to make the investment in Eddie Lacy in a season-long situation or in your draft. Latest report coming out of the Seattle Times was that Lacy and Rawls could be a timeshare. The quote, take a fairly equal share of the base down carries. Rawls has been productive in the offseason work. Lacy recovering from an ankle injury. So while you put value in Lacy making weight or being one of the highest players that has changed teams on the overall best available boards, as we talked about a few weeks back on Yahoo when they first came out, Lacy's been battling an ankle injury and really can't do much. Fortunately, he's not eating as much. Rawls was a huge disappointment last year. He was put in a position to be the number one back and put up some big numbers and get a lot of work. And he had setbacks, and then once he finally got on the field, he wasn't nearly as productive. I think both of these guys are in situations where they do have something to prove, and I'm not sure either of them are going to be worth being your RB1. RB2, again, I'm not making any investment in Eddie Lacy. It will take a lot to have me drop a daily fantasy price on him or to roster him, and even more to roster him in a season-long league where I would only touch him on waivers, and I don't think Eddie Lacy is going to be available on waivers. The only scenario where I can see he's available on waivers is somebody drafts him as their RB1 or 2, gets nothing out of him or very little. That owner's team stinks. He blames himself and Eddie Lacy for it. He cuts Eddie Lacy 8, 9, 10 weeks into the season, and Lacy is sitting there on waivers, and then you make no investment. And in that scenario, I could see a situation where if Rawls is hurt, then an Eddie Lacy would be worth picking up in a season-long league on waivers or buying in a daily fantasy game. I'm not very optimistic. I want to be more optimistic on Thomas Rawls. I think Rawls is the better play here. There's less baggage with Rawls. There is last season. But last season and the issues that kept Rawls from being productive and getting a lot of playing time, and now with Lacy there as a well-paid free agent, could be enough motivation to get Rawls' attention and keep him on the field this year. So while I won't necessarily be looking to draft Thomas Rawls in a season-long league, he would get my attention as maybe an RB3. With RB2 upside, with the hope to be an RB1, but I think that's optimistic. I'm still not touching Eddie Lacy until I see at least two or three very productive, high-volume games in a Seattle Seahawks uniform. Le'Veon Bell. Still has not signed his franchise tender. There's more feeling out of Pittsburgh that Le'Veon Bell will not hold out, that he will sign the franchise tender. That would pay him $12.1 million for the upcoming season. The most that any other running back in the league will receive in base salary this year is around 6.2, 6.3. So even though Le'Veon Bell, like most players, doesn't want to be franchised, he still is looking at making twice as much, basically, as any other running back in the NFL if he signs this deal, with a look ahead towards a potential long-term deal in the near future. The deadline is July 17th, so you'll know before your season-long leagues whether or not Le'Veon Bell has signed that franchise tender. I see absolutely no reason at all that Le'Veon Bell shouldn't get full consideration to be the top player selected in many season-long fantasy football leagues for the simple fact that Bell is an every-down back, and when he's not getting carries at running back, he is a legitimate target out of the backfield for Ben Roethlisberger as much as Antonio Brown. Speaking of targets, Eric Ebron, not a player that I've spent a lot on in daily fantasy in recent years. I've never rostered him in season-long leagues, but last year, 13 games played, 85 targets. It's pretty significant for a tight end. If you're in a must-play tight end league, or as is the case in one of my season-long leagues that I commission, our flex is limited to wide receiver or tight end. You cannot play running back as a flex. You can only play wide receiver or tight end as a flex. The Lions did add tight ends in the offseason, signed Darren Fells via free agency, drafted Michael Roberts. These are considered block-first tight ends that may help balance the Lion attack and help Abdullah be more productive since he looks like the RB1 in Detroit. I don't want to necessarily read too much into other tight ends on the roster, and while these are only blockers, I'm sure there will be situations where they do get targeted. Perhaps some short yardage situations, play action situations. But more and more teams are having tight ends play basically wide receiver positions. And of course, we went through all this with wide receiver tight end on Jeremy Shockey and how he should be paid. But more and more, you see more than a handful of guys who just are physically larger, thicker, wider than wide receivers, playing wide receiver positions. Now, they're not playing boundary wide receiver positions in most cases, but they're lining up off the line of scrimmage. They're not being looked at as much to run block, and they almost could be considered wide receivers if it wasn't for the fact that we are hung up on the tight end designation. The success of Rob Gronkowski and the success of the Patriots using multiple tight ends, not just Gronk, we know some others, has led to this, where more and more teams, many of them with offensive-minded head coaches, have decided to take their traditional tight end and move him out of the box and put him on the hash marks and get him where his hand is not on the ground and just give him a run, give him a start like a wide receiver. Ebron may have the opportunity to do more of that now with the Lions. I'm still not sold it just seems like there are too many games where Ebron has one target, and the Lions' pass-catching situation, it just seems to change very, very often since Megatron stepped away. By the way, nice ad for Megatron to do for the new Transformers movie. I don't know if you caught it. We're not hearing a lot from Calvin Johnson these days. That's about as good as it's going to get, that particular ad that he did for the new Transformers movie. But as it relates to Ebron, sure, I would, if you're in a must-play tight end situation for your league, he has value. I just wouldn't put him up very high on the board of tight ends, but in the bottom of the second tier, because the Lions are a pass-first attack, not knowing if Abdullah takes another step forward this year, I can see him being worth drafting as your tight end one, as long as you're not investing too high of a draft pick in it at the expense of getting, say, a wide receiver three or a running back three. I think you can still get Ebron middle to bottom of your draft in a tight end must-carry, must-play type league. In a league like mine, which is a wide receiver tight end flex, no running back flex, Ebron's value goes down even more because he clearly isn't one of the top handful of tight ends that you're going to select. But yeah, 85 targets in 13 games. I mean, you do the math on that, and it shows that there's an average there of around, what, 8 targets per game, seven to 8 targets per game. Some of those were double-digit target games, and others were none, and then there are the 3 games missed there. But that's how I feel about Ebron, and the ability has always seemed to be there. There just doesn't seem to be enough of a connection between him and Matthew Stafford or with the way the Lions run their offensive attack. The Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast is teed up at Landsberg Golf Club, which is one of 7 golf courses on the Florida Golf Trail. Bloomingdale Golfers Club is also one of those courses and will host my next Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournament coming up on July 8th. That event is sold out. If you would like to be placed on the alternate list, you can email me at toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. Bloomingdale Golfers Club, Northdale Golf and Tennis Club, Bardmore Golf Club, Landsbrook, and the Preserve at Terra are the 5 public courses on the Florida Golf Trail in the greater Tampa Bay area. And there are 2 private courses on the Florida Golf Trail. Bayou Club, which is the sister slash border club of Bardmore. And, of course, River Hills Country Club, which hosted my 2016 summer Todd Wright Tour event last year. I've played them all. I recommend them all. And I will say that in the past 3 to 9 months, I have seen virtually every property on the Florida Golf Trail move in the right direction in terms of little things, better condition, better greens. My compliments to the Florida Golf Trail on what their properties are doing overall, and in particular Keith at Northdale doing a very nice job. I wouldn't choose the Florida Golf Trail to sponsor my podcast or to host my golf tournaments if I didn't feel good about the direction of these golf properties, the general managers, and the marketing people that work at these properties. Check them out. 7 golf courses on the Florida Golf Trail. And, of course, we always highlight Landsberg Golf Club, which has hosted 2 of my Todd Wright Tour events and the most recent one back on April the 1st. That does it for this edition of the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.